Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael back here with the Faith and Freedom Show, where we, too, are going to be talking about rights and wrongs. How about that stuff, right and wrong? Again, you can give us a call, 277-KFNX. Quote from Sir William Blackstone, this is circa 1766, talking about people who have enough time, they get the energy, they get all the passion to run for office. And he gives sort of a warning here. Let's see what he says. Most gentlemen of considerable property at some period or other in their lives are ambitious of representing their country in Parliament. Yes, that was context. And those who are ambitious of receiving so high a trust would also do well to remember its nature and importance. Now, folks, this is what the founders were reading. This is who they were quoting and citing when they were discussing the issues of the day and how they should order their lives and government. Here went Sir William Blackstone. Speaking of those entering the legislature, they are not thus honorably distinguished from their other fellow subjects, merely that they may privilege their persons, their estates, or their domestics, that they may lift under party banners, may grant or withhold supplies, may vote with or vote against a popular or unpopular administration, but upon considerations far more interesting and important. Did you hear how he was describing that? It's what we're seeing today. Anybody see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart? That's important stuff here, guys. That's what they're not, what we're seeing people in office often do today is what was described specifically. The founders were reading was not what you're supposed to go to the legislature to do. Here are the considerations that are far more interesting and important. Mr. Blackstone said that those who want to go to the legislature are guardians of the Constitution, the makers, repealers, and interpreters of the laws, delegated to watch. Now, watch this. I wish they would all go there with this in mind. Delegated to watch, to check, and to avert every dangerous innovation. That was it, folks. He goes on a little bit, but to watch, to check, and avert every dangerous innovation, to propose, to adopt, and to cherish any solid and well-weighed improvement, not rushed, oh, the sky's falling, panic. Well-weighed improvement, bound by every tie of nature, of honor, and of religion, to transmit that Constitution and those laws to their posterity, amended if possible, at least without any derogation. Problem is, folks, now what are they currently? We see people passing to our posterity. Slavery. So it's just something I'm just reporting. This is hopefully a little bit editorial, a little bit journalistic. It's what we're seeing. He says, and how unbecoming it must appear in a member of the legislature to vote for a new law who is utterly ignorant of the old. What kind of interpretation can he be enabled to give who is a stranger to the text upon which he comments? The tough part is these days, too, they are a stranger to the text that's right before them. It's packed. I wonder how many of them knew that there was a dangerous innovation. So let me tell you what Mr. Titus and Olson of William J. Olson, PC, these guys are constitutional litigators, okay? They go before the Supreme Court and things like that. They said that there was a second provision that was a dangerous innovation in the current Budget Act. They said the Budget Control Act of 2011 establishes a joint select committee of 12 members, 6 from the House and 6 from the Senate. And we, you and I, the common man, say, oh, they're all getting along. They're so sweet. But it turns out it's a dangerous innovation. 3 of the 6 House members are appointed by the Speaker of the House. So whoever's in favor of the Speaker of the House, and 3 are appointed by the House Minority Leader. So whoever's in favor with that minority leader, 3 of the 6 Senate members are appointed by the majority leader and 3 by the leader of the minority. And you say, well, that's okay. That's fair. Well, if you read the Constitution and those who founded it, you realize it's not. It's dysfunctional. Here, members of Congress yield their individual legislative duties and responsibilities to a super Congress, selected not by the people, but by Republican and Democrat leaders. And you say, oh, huh? Well, they went on to explain here. Section 402 contains a number of procedural rules designed to expedite consideration of the Joint Committee recommendations. Remember what I read from Mr. Blackstone? Solid and well-weighed improvements. Well, what they've done here is, there's not just a logical improvement we're looking at here. It was intended to be ambitions competing against ambitions. That there is a Senate with two people from every state. And then there's the House that has representation depending on your community and how many people are in your community. There was a very important particular purpose in that bills for spending were going to be tied to the debt, and those spending bills would be coming from those representatives from your community. It was set up because of an understanding in history and well studied about government, how things work and how things fall apart. So Mr. Titus and Mr. Olson went on to explain. He said the constitutional order is quite different from this recent budget bill. Article 1, Section 1 vests the legislative power in the bicameral Congress. That's two rooms, camera. Okay, bicameral, two-roomed Congress, composed of a House of Representatives and a Senate. The members of each body are elected in two very different manners. Each senator is elected by the vote of the people of an entire state. All the people in the entire state, all 33 million or whatever they are in California, elect two people, and that's their Senate representation. Of course, then the legislature is composed of representatives from those smaller districts. And so, obviously, California has a whole bunch of them. The composition of each house is then deliberately designed by the Constitution to represent vastly different majorities for good reason. And this is a quote by well-learned Supreme Courts of our past. They said, providing that no law can take effect without a prescribed majority of the members of both houses, the framers reemphasized their belief that legislation should not be enacted unless it has been carefully and fully considered by the nation's elected officials, not by 12 people. Not by 12 politically in people, selected by a very few. So, it's not designed to be selected by six of 100 elected senators and six of 435 elected representatives. And there are not, and Mr. Titus and Olson, they're quoting James Wilson of constitutional farming fame. Is there a danger of a legislative despotism? Theory and practice both proclaim it. If the legislative authority be not restrained, there can be neither liberty nor stability, and it can only be restrained by dividing it within itself into distinct and independent branches. So it was designed to maintain distinct and separate branches. Now you say this is just too heady, it's just so political science. No, folks, it's law and it's functional. And what's happening is we're seeing a usurpation. You ever see the term usurpation? That's what you're seeing. And so today's call is to consider the higher ground. There's a higher ground with regard to your duty as somebody who is of the people. You have a responsibility to make sure that your government is really a minister of God for your good, and they're ministering on your behalf as you love your neighbor as yourself. So it takes great responsibility. We're going to come back. We're going to be talking about principles of doing things from a higher standard. And sometimes a little bit weird, a little bit strange, but I think the benefits are really good. We end up prospering, getting great benefits if we, by faith, will do those things that are right. David Alan Carmichael, Preservative Talk Radio. Come back to the Faith and Freedom Show. We'll be right back.